I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Thank you for listening. It's a treat to talk to you all.
And thank you to our patrons for doing our quiz.
I hope you found it fun. I thought it was very interesting, actually.
Yeah, we did enjoy doing it. Well, we got in trouble because we didn't use our mics, so the sound was a bit dodgy.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, well, everyone. Technology's not our strongest suit.
No. Well, today's case, this week's case, was one that I came across in Britain's Most Evil Killers. It has all the makings of a drama. Indeed, there is a rumour that a drama is already on the blocks about it. It's comparatively recent. It is a British case. And I hope you find it as interesting as I do.
What is it?
It's the case of Benjamin Luke Field.
Field spelt as in field.
Part of the countryside.
There's not more than one way to spell field, is there?
I don't think so. Well, there might be.
You field information.
Yes.
That's spelt the same way.
But this is a really creepy case. And what's worse is it's crimes that I find. I can understand some crimes of passion and things like this, but this is the complete opposite. This is premeditated, extraordinary arrogance. So this is the case of Ben Field.
Ben Field, here we go.
Ben Field was born around 1990. He was a middle child of three. He had an elder sister called Hannah and a younger brother called Tom. He was raised in Market Harborough in Leicestershire. His mother Beverly was a Liberal Democratic councillor from 2003 to 2009. And the family moved, however, to Olney in 2008, where his father Ian became the minister of the Baptist Church. So you have a father who's a minister in the Baptist Church, a mother who's been a Lib Dem councillor. Ben, however, is, how can I put it politely, an outsider. His brother made up a word to describe him, which was interiority. In other words, he always lived inside. He wasn't the most gregarious of boys. Ben Field later said, "It's the habit of a lifetime, living inside my head." It would be fair to say that he was intensely manipulative and saw himself as extremely special. He was a voracious reader and a pedant. He got 10 GCSEs, 3 A-levels and a 2-1 in English literature from the University of Buckingham. He was a serial liar. He was also a narcissist, amoral and promiscuous bisexual. He had relationships with men on dating sites and he had consistent relationships with women as well. In particular, a woman called Laura and another one called later Heather. Now, when he was at the University of Buckingham, Ben Field came into contact with a man called Peter Farker. Peter Farker had been a very distinguished English teacher. He taught at Manchester Grammar, and then at Stowe, which is, you know, not very far from the University of Buckingham, where he was head of English. He was inspirational. He was very religious. Indeed, celibate. He lived with his mother at number 3 Manor Park until she died in 2002. And he retired from Stowe in 2004 and went to lecture at the University of Buckingham. He was a committed Christian, but also gay, and admitted to being attracted to young men like Ben Field, who was tall, handsome, and very fond of himself. Peter Farquhar was a bird-like man. If you look at the pictures, I do recommend you do. It's very interesting. He's a little bird-like man, very buttoned up. It was said that he decided he would remain celibate because of his internal conflict. But there is no doubt in my mind that Benfield ruthlessly manipulated the conflict in Peter Farquhar. He was also, Peter Farquhar also had a fierce inner tenacity. He was not a man to be taken lightly. He was an evangelical Christian. And indeed, he'd even contemplated entering the church, but didn't. Benfield inveigled his way into Peter Farquhar's life with the clear intention of getting him to change his will in his favour, leaving him this considerable house at 3 Manor Park in Buckingham.
I just can't imagine ever doing something like that to someone, like targeting someone for something.
By Christmas 2012, Field was effectively tormenting Peter Farquhar, who was much older, of course. And Farquhar even wrote a poem about Field in which he said, and I quote, "Deceptive and disloyal as a friend, Ben uses people for their own ends, willing to wound and happy to strike, returning kindness with a sneering dislike. Hurting others is his special pleasure, cruel disregard, a happy leisure." So, Peter Farquhar, a man in his late 60s, has taken a shine to Benfield, a young man in his 20s. By October 2013, Fields persuaded Peter Farquhar that he loves him and that he'd finished with women. Molly's looking sceptical at me across the table.
It's like the Tinder Swindler situation, isn't it? You're like, come on.
Yeah. Anyway, Benfield has moved in to 3 Manor Park in November 2013. And he begins to, as they say now, the contemporary phrase, gaslight Peter Farquhar. He's trying to persuade him that he's going mad. On Peter's 68th birthday, in January 2014, Benfield proposes. And they go through, believe it or not, a betrothal ceremony. And Peter Farquhar wrote, and this is the same man who wrote the poem describing how ruthless Field could be. He said, and I quote again, "It's one of the happiest moments of my life. Gone are the fears of dying alone."
Oh, bless him.
Farquhar actually wrote and published 3 novels about his conflict, all of which describe his grappling with his own gayness and not wanting to come out and not being certain what to do and talking about. And so, if you look up this case, you'll find Farquhar referred to quite often as a novelist rather than as a teacher. But actually what he was an English teacher of some considerable renown. Field persuaded Farquhar that he was suffering from night terrors and hallucinations, and he was not in control of himself. In fact, of course, Field was drugging him. Poor Farquhar was literally, they had to be manipulated. It would be interesting to say that Field, as a job at this point, was working in a care home.
Oof.
Peter began to tell one or two of the people he knew, but of course, remember, he was now betrothed to Benfield, that he was suffering from some kind of mystery illness. We didn't know quite what it was. Benfield drugged Peter Farquhar more than 50 times. He tormented him. He moved things around the house so that Peter didn't find them. And then Peter told Peter that, oh, you see, your memory's going. It was a complete gaslight operation.
So awful.
If you look back at the film of the same name, you know, you'll see exactly what I mean.
Mm.
It's the husband trying to make the wife think she's gone mad.
Mm-hmm.
But in mid-September 2015, Peter Farquhar changes his will. He changes it in Field's favour, and he gives Field, in the will, £20,000 and the right to live at Three Manor Park for the rest of his life. That's not enough for Field, who has now announced that he's going to become a vicar. He then changes the will . Peter Farquhar was killed on the 25th of October 2015. Once again, Field has given him drugs, whiskey, and apparently, although we cannot be absolutely sure, suffocated him. When Farquhar's body is found by the cleaning lady. At this point, Field is not living in the house. We'll come back to that.
Mm-hmm.
The cleaning lady thinks she's simply drunk himself to death. She finds the whiskey, half-finished bottle of whiskey. The coroner agrees it's natural causes. Peter Farquhar has passed away. Simple as that. The fact that the will has been changed again, so that this time Peter Farquhar not only gets, sorry, this time Benjamin Field not only gets £20,000, but he also gets a share of the house. And in fact, he collects it. I think he gets £142,000
from the
sale of Manor Park. Oh, but this story gets even darker. Two doors down from number 3 Manor Park is number 6 Manor Park.
Right.
Where an elderly lady called Anne Moore Martin lives alone. She used to live there, as did Peter with her mother. She'd lived there with her mother, but her mother had passed away. A Catholic. Anne Moore Martin was a model when she was a young woman and a head teacher. She was a loving, kind, affectionate woman, but also, it has to be said, she was 81, also vulnerable and a little bit lonely. She treated her niece, she didn't have children herself, Anne Marie, as though she were her daughter, and she'd left Anne Marie all her assets. Before Field killed Peter Farquhar, he began showering Anne Moore Martin, the neighbour, with gifts. All manner of things. And then he started suggesting to her that it was perfectly possible for an elderly woman to have a sexual relationship with a young man.
Oh, God.
And in 2016, in April, it's pretty clear that some kind of sexual relationship had started. And he moved himself out of Three Manor Park into Six Manor Park. Incidentally, just for fun, he burgles the empty number 5 Manor Park using the key that the neighbours have given to Anne Moore Martin for safekeeping.
That's unbelievable.
Well, we are talking about someone seriously. And guess what? Of course, Ben starts to persuade Anne Moore Martin to change her will.
No, you surprised me.
Well, the number of tricks that Field played. At one point, he told her that he needed a new car. He had a car, but he persuaded her that he needed a new one. So she gave him £4,400 to buy a car. He goes to a local hire company, hires a car for the day, drives the car to number 6 Manor Park to show her the new car he's bought.
Ugh, this guy's awful.
He hasn't bought it at all. He's just keeping the money and rented it for the day. He also gave Anne Moore Martin, and I think this is almost the creepiest part of the story, a large framed photograph of himself with the legend round it, "I am always with you," it says in the frame.
Ugh.
It is a creepy story, isn't it?
So creepy.
Really. And just to add a little insult to this horrid story, he then proceeds, without Anne Moore Martin knowing, to videotape her on his phone committing a sex act. We are not talking about the nicest human being in the planet here. He was clearly thinking, I'm going to prove that I had a sexual relationship with her. He intended to use it, obviously, if things got tough. In September 2016, Field persuaded Anne that his brother needed a dialysis machine because he had a terrible kidney problem. And she gave him £26,700 to buy a dialysis machine. His brother had no problem at all. We are talking someone who's a ruthless charmer. And he began writing, it's got everything about a drama, this one. He began writing messages on mirrors around Six Manor Park, the house that he's now sharing with Anne Moore Martin, suggesting that she leaves her money to Ben. And he also suggests that they're all from God. Molly is looking rather sort of surprised here.
I'm not looking surprised, I look disgusted. Well, that's what I wanted to convey.
In December 2016, he persuades Anne to change her will in his favour. In other words, disinheriting the niece, and everything now goes to Benfield. But unfortunately for Benfield, in February 2017, Anne is taken ill. Not because he's drugged her, but just simply she's taken ill. She's in her 80s.
Okay.
And she's admitted to hospital. Ben proceeds to clear up the house, removing any more incriminating details of his plans. And sadly, tragically, Anne dies of natural causes in May 2017. After she's discovered how much she's been deceived by Benfield. The niece is clearly highly suspicious of Benfield, and we should add that by extraordinary coincidence, P. Peter Farker's will and Anne Will Martin's will are both made with the same solicitor, who is also now becomes extremely suspicious because she's already changed one will in Benfield's favour, and now she's changing another will in Benfield's favour. That's how manipulative it was. Had they gone to two separate different solicitors, who's to say?
Different.
Might have been different. It was really only after Anne's niece alerted the police that they started to take a proper interest in Benfield. And they knew and became quite clear quite quickly that the death of Peter Farker should be investigated. So the body is exhumed. He's found to have been drugged, poisoned. Almost certainly, although no one can be precisely certain, almost certainly suffocated while he was under the influence of the drugs and the whiskey. The police discover that Field is fixated with death and that he has a list of 100 potential victims, including his own family, in particular targeting elderly, vulnerable and affluent people. Peter Farker and Anne Moore Martin, precisely. The trial, Benfield's trial, began on the 30th of April 2019 at Oxford Crown Court, and it was enormously complicated because it was an awful lot of circumstantial evidence. You know, no one had seen him kill anybody. There was no precise, no one saw him with a dagger in his hand or a gun or, you know. But it was very much dependent on forensic evidence. It was a very long trial. It lasted 77 days until in August 2019, Benfield was found guilty of Peter Farker's murder. He was sentenced to life with a minimum of 36 years. On the 25th of October 2019, which means that he will be well into his middle 60s before he's released.
Good.
If you look back at Field, he is a narcissist, a sadist, amoral, and deeply cruel. He's used manipulative skills to target vulnerable elderly people. He is a man for whom there can be no possible compassion.
No.
It is as nasty
a
crime as you can possibly imagine, which costs two people their lives.
Taking advantage of people is just...
I'm not suggesting for a moment that Anne Moore Martin was killed. On the contrary, she died of natural causes.
But it can't have helped. And
no.
Yeah.
But if there's any consolation, before she died, she changed her will back. So he didn't profit.
At least she did work it out before she died.
Yeah. It changed the will back.
And that helped to get him caught.
It did. The solicitor, the wills.
The niece.
The niece. In the end, the wheels came off.
Mm.
But crikey, had he gone to a different solicitor? Had he not been just...
If she hadn't got ill...
Number three and number six, Manipal. Had she not got ill in February 2017, who's to say it wouldn't have got away with it again?
Yeah. Thank goodness.
Yes. But I think that is just a very interesting case and one I didn't know.
Me neither.
I think it's just...
I think it's quite recent.
Yes, it's extremely recent.
I didn't know that at all.
Yeah.
Thank you. Benfield.
Thank you. I'm not sure it's the right word when it comes to Benfield.
You know what I mean.
I know what you mean, yes. But there
you
go.
Thank you for telling us about it.
No, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Nice.
I'm glad you found it interesting.
No, I did. I did, yeah. I didn't know about that at all.
No, well, there you go.
We never run out of material, though, do we?
We don't seem to. We don't seem to.
A lot of cases.
Yeah. So, have you got a wonderful weeks coming up?
Something cheery. Nothing very exciting. Just busy.
You're not going to Cannes?
No.
I'm certainly not going to
You're
Cannes.
You're not going to Cannes?
No, I'm not.
I'll not see you on the Croisette?
I love Cannes.
I know you do.
I really, really, I like it better than Nice. I really love Cannes. I kind of miss Paris. I miss the south of France, but we haven't been going anywhere.
Maybe you will get to go this year.
Maybe. Got to go to Tunisia.
You did a trip to Cornwall.
I did a trip to Cornwall. It was very nice. But unbelievably good weather.
Really?
I mean, well, yeah, we got a bit of rain here and there, you know, but basically very good weather.
My mum is a big fan of Rick Stein. I heard your Rick Stein restaurant story. And so I've been looking after my mum. She's been a bit poorly. And I've watched all of series one of Rick Stein's Cornwall. So I feel like I know it
yes.
really well.
I've got nothing against Rick Stein. I just think he's, you know, it's a monster that he isn't running it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. That's what happens. That's why the wheels come off those yeah. things. You put your name on everything and then you leave them and then they don't run properly.
Yeah. He's just overstretched.
Jamie Oliver's the same.
Overstretched.
Mm.
Perhaps he's a better businessman than Jamie Oliver. I don't know.
I don't know. Probably should stick to presenting instead of trying to...
But yeah, you can't move in Cornwall without Rick Stein.
I know. I mean,
everywhere.
I know.
We did find a very, very nice wine bar, believe it or not, tiny, called Bin 2.
Bin 2, as yeah. in a bin.
Bin.
Trash can.
Yeah. And
that was in Padstow.
In
was
Padstow,
it?
And if you go to Padstow, I do recommend it. It's easy to find, but it's not exactly large. And they've got three tables outside covered with, proper
heater things.
And they put their heaters and things. Mm. But inside, it's probably only room for about six people or eight at the most.
There are a couple of those near me, wine bars like that.
Yeah, but really nice. so we had a. Yeah, interesting time.
Good, I'm glad.
So, Mo, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to all the people who help us. Our producer, Sam Bray, my brother Dan, who did the music, my friend George, who drew our caricature, to Audio Boom for hosting us, to Jeffrey for all the hard work, and to you, the listeners. Thank you so much.
Thank you all very much. As we often say, it's an absolute privilege to podcast for you. And thank you so much for listening. And as I often say, please be careful out there.